Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
I guess we're live.
Yeah.
All right. Well, who knows how many listeners we have right now, and we're still waiting on Alana. But this is Graphic Policy Radio, with politics and comics meet the multiverse. Right now with me is Ken Quinnell. If you want to say hi and introduce yourself.
Hey, how's it going?
And I'm Brett Shanker. Alana's AWOL, who's our third host. I probably should tell people that we're live on the air. That would be helpful. Yeah, so I guess we probably should wait around for her, but while we're just, you know, kicking it and waiting for our late third member, so I guess we could start off with the great question that always starts with how you got started in comic books. Like, what's the first comic book you ever read, which seems to be a popular question?
The funny thing is I can answer that one exactly. I know the exact issue, the exact day, and everything like that. It was actually Christmas Eve in 1981, and in my stocking I found, I believe it's X-Men 145, Uncanny X-Men 145, the one that has Dr. Doom on the cover over the, like, all of the X-Men knocked out, and it turns out that it's not really Dr. Doom, but a arcade Doombot or whatever, and I was hooked within the first few seconds of reading it and kind of never really turned back then. I've been lifelong X-Men and Marvel fan, but have branched out into other stuff and read DC occasionally, and pretty much anything with zombies I'll read too, but we'll always try to read other stuff too when it's available.
Yeah, I know you're a big zombie guy. It's,
yeah.
Have you read, speaking of like obscure zombies, Raise the Dead at all?
I have not.
It is, I want to see Dynamite. And there was the first volume that came out, and the second volume just started, I think, a couple months ago.
Okay. Yeah, so, there's actually, like, a huge flood of zombie comics being published these days. Like, every time I look around, there's another, you know, new one. And, you know, most of them are not horrible, but most of them aren't that good either. So it's this weird mix of, like, they're really flooding it, but it's also, you know, sort of like when they started flooding the market with Deadpool comics. Like, at first they were pretty good, and then there's just so many ideas that you can go around with that you're running out of quality ideas, and they're doing that with the zombie comics these days. So
I think Alana is in. Oops. Oh, that's you. Hold on. Alana?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I tried to call in to you, actually, as if your phone number was the show. I apologize for that, folks. I can't believe I'm late on my very, very first show.
That's okay. I think we covered pretty nicely.
I'm so the, you'll just say that I'm the Grant Morrison of the show because I called in late.
I saw him at San Diego Comic-Con, and the guy is as, like, smooth and cool looking as he does is in, like, every single photo of him out there.
That's hilarious.
Just randomly standing around. So all three of us are on the air, which is kind of awesome. So this is the first episode of Graphic Policy Radio, and where comics and politics meet the multiverse. So we're debating whether or not it's multiverse or the multiverses, which we still haven't quite decided.
Singular. We'll take your votes on that. We'll take your votes on that.
My thought was multiverses, just because we're covering different publishers, and since they each have their own multiverse, it was multiverses. But theoretically, I guess they could be all part of one bigger, grander multiverse, since there's been, you know, crossovers between companies over the years. So it could, I guess, theoretically be an even bigger multiverse or whatever. So,
yeah, I mean, that's my argument, but who knows?
So I apologize to you. I said, I believe we're speaking about zombies at the time I was calling in.
We were, yeah, because I know Ken's, like, a huge zombie person with constantly, I see tons of reviews for 28 Days Later, which is done by Boom, and The Walking Dead by Image, and I myself am fairly much of a zombie fan, but I just recently started reading 28 Days Later, and I definitely went in with trepidation, since I'm a huge fan of the movies, and shockingly, it was really, really good.
So in 28, so in the Walking Dead comic books, I haven't seen the show. I apologize. Is it the what's a metaphor? What are zombies a metaphor in this one? Are they a contagion? Are they a different culture than us who's invading us? What's the metaphor there?
That's a good question.
And 28 later or Walking Dead?
Walking Dead, I think.
Walking Dead. Walking Dead.
Hmm. yeah, go ahead, Brad, because I'm kind of
I have to
think about that.
It's actually a really good question. Well, in fact, one, Kirkman hasn't said what the cause is. So we don't know. I'm going to go with just general unease of the times.
Mm.
Which is the cop-out answer.
The point is I should be reading it, though, is what you're saying.
I think it's definitely not an external thing. I don't think it's us, it's one of those, it's down that vein. So it's not like some outside force is coming in to get us. It's, we're the ones that actually suck. And, it's us eating ourselves. And I think that's kind of the, I don't know if Brett, if you caught the zombie panel at Comic-Con, they played a bit of it on the radio coverage of it. And, kind of everybody that was there was talking about the concept of, the problem, and the good zombie stuff is not the zombies. It's how dumb we are, and that the zombies are actually really easy to defeat, and we just fuck it up. And that's kind of the common thing, and that's very much explains The Walking Dead, is that, it's not really the zombies aren't that big of a deal. It's the people in their own inherent incompetence and their own inherent evil, and that's the stuff that really is the real things you should be afraid of in those comics, I think.
To me, I think that's what the thing I love about Kirkman's take on it is it's a character study. It really isn't about the zombies at all. It's really the interaction of the people and that general, unease. How do you actually deal in that situation, and how are you going to react around people, and, are you good-natured in that you're going to work together and help each other, or are you really out there to protect yourself and protect your family, or is it screw the family, I'm out to protect myself? And it's 87 issues in, and I think every story arc is a different exploration of that, and it's a great series. I can't praise it enough. And what's impressive is, especially when the television started, I don't know if y'all saw it where you were, but I noticed tons of people reading the trades on Metro Rides all sorts of age, race, gender, everything, just reading the series. And I know tons of my friends now who normally do not read comic books are digging the comic. They've actually gotten into it and been really enjoying it.
That's what you want to hear, right? That's what you want to hear. That's why you want to see these things on TV, really. But I'm always curious, for people who aren't friends with you or me, they see a TV show and they love it, and there's a comic book version of it. I know that there, for example, I'm a huge Game of Thrones fan myself, of the book, of the whole series, and there's going to be a graphic novel version of the show coming out soon. And why or how would a fan even know that that was coming out unless they're such a hardcore fan of the series that they sit around reading message boards? How would a normal middle of the road fan of a show realize that there was a comic to go to? And if they weren't friends with me or you or someone who's going to tell us about it. I would love to ask those people on the subway, how did you know that there was this to read? And maybe it turns out they all were actually comic book fans, but you're probably right. I'm sure a lot of them were new to the genre, to the medium.
What else was interesting was the one friend in particular I'm thinking of, female, never came to me until after she started watching the show and was well aware that there was a comic book series. I don't know how the hell she knew it was a comic book series, but maybe just generally learning about the show. But yeah, it's funny. I mean, you bring that up is a perfect example was Green Lantern, where DC finally ran a ad after the credits, so no one was actually in the theater at the point in time, plugging comic books. It was go to your local store and get comic books. Of course, the websites that they threw up, the links were broken, but,
what?
Yeah. It was infamous. It was really funny. It was something www.comics.dc.com, whatever the website was, instead of just comics.dc.com, they screwed up the subdomain. So one link was busted, but they also had the comic shop locator, but that was after the fact, after the movie was done, after the credits, and there was, I think, me and maybe three other people in the theater.
You guys were just waiting because you couldn't wait to see Nick Fury.
Yeah.
No, exactly. There's absolutely no reason to stay late after a DC movie to see Nick Fury at the end, for obvious reasons. So yeah, there probably wasn't anybody in there. But that's ridiculous that they don't take advantage of their own products to push their own products.
Yeah, I mean,
I've seen, you know, various bookstores, particularly Borders, not, but obviously that won't last much longer. But I've seen, you know, displays in there where they put the comics with stuff that, you know, has the visuals of the movie and stuff like that. So, you know, if you're someone that frequents a store like that that carries the trades and stuff, you should be able to see it because it's pretty prominently displayed and at, you know, at various times. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's
that makes sense.
Yeah, I saw that at Borders. Well, yeah. Barnes & Noble's have done that. But, yeah, I think that's the bigger question is how do you build comic books to a larger audience? And that's the thing that they're trying to figure out now and then somewhat failing at it. Well, I said, I mean, it was so often what we were going to talk about. But one of the things that I've been doing on the site was that Facebook look at. One of the things I looked at was DC Comics, Facebook fans versus how many people are fans of the movies versus how many fans of the characters. And it's like tenfold the size of the universe of people who are a fan of the movies compared to the comics. And to me, there's just a failure to convert people from one to the other, which is kind of sad. But, you know, hopefully they're getting better.
Well, I think, and both of you probably know the answer to this question better than I do, but, you know, it seems like there's a kind of an overall problem with the comics industry and not being able to use, you know, particularly good business practices, and this just seems like another particular example of that.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable. I don't know how many people can keep failing up. And I love how the problem with DC is nothing to do with the editors or the people who are running the company. It's that we need to begin with the number ones and have no women working for them. Like I think actually, Brett, you were the person who's put it this way, which is that you're going to keep repeating the same exact mistakes and not doing anything new if you still have exactly the same leadership all the time. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny we can actually start going into this now, I guess. So the issue is DC New. And the general sense I got coming out of San Diego was while people were excited for what they're doing, but everyone was really nervous. Like it was one of those you're starting everything off at number one, you're 52 issues that are number one. That's great. You're kind of updating stuff. That's fine. You know, everything's going to be a little easier to get into, but really what are you doing that's different? Like it's the same editorial. It's a lot of the same writers and artists, though in their defense, they are giving a lot of the up and comers like Scott Snyder, who I think is fantastic on American Vampire, has been doing Batman.
True.
So they are giving some new writers, but at the same time, it's like, it's the same old, same old. Like I'm not seeing, I saw a little bit improvement at the DC booth in San Diego. They actually had a really cool thing where they had a camera on an artist as they were drawing up on stage. And they were talking to the artist going over their style and like what they're actually doing and what's their process when they create, you know, when they draw something, which was really, really nice and a great use of kind of multimedia. At the same time,
that's awesome.
It's like, what else are you doing? Like, I'm seeing a little bit more engagement on Twitter, Facebook. I'm not really seeing anything. It's like, what are you doing to expand the universe? They're supposedly going to start running TV ads, but at the same time, it's I'm not seeing drastic
change. Well,
we're going
to harp on DC marketing issues with regards to Comic Con, and all those things do sound good. You know, they had some sort of cross-promotional thing going on with The Hollywood Reporter, and in it they actually ran some pages from one of their new books, which I was really excited that was happening, because here you have an audience of people who follow the entertainment industry, who probably say that they love Superman but have probably never read a comic book in their life, and here you have them with a magazine in their hand that is going to have pages from an actual comic book in it, and what a great opportunity, right? I was really excited. And I went and I actually read the pages that are in this issue, and they were okay. I mean, it wasn't like it was some travesty Rob Liefeld kind of a thing. It was just sort of okay. And nobody who doesn't love comics is going to read that and say, wow, this is a really important medium and we need to be looking into it differently. The best that someone could have taken away from looking at those pages, it was from Aquaman, was that, oh, I guess these comics aren't just for small children. They could also be for older children. Like, that's the most you could have gotten out of that from a reader. And it's what a wasted opportunity, since they do have some very talented people like Snyder in their stable who they could have, you know, used some pages from with that Hollywood audience, that industry audience. I don't know what was going on there with that. It was a really wasted opportunity.
Well, I think as a whole, that was a weird situation. And that Entertainment Weekly, too, when they did, and I kind of brought it up on Twitter, was Entertainment Weekly's coverage of Comic-Con leading up to it. They covered 16 movies, 15 television shows, and 2 comic books. And it's like, where's the comic in Comic-Con? Which is,
well, people
such
have been
a,
saying that for a long time, yeah, but... What were the comics out of curiosity?
That they talked Justice League, which is the promo that's in the DC Comics 52 sampler, which actually gets me excited. Like, reading those pages is like, all right, this actually looks good. And then the Todd McFarlane, Stan Lee, and whatever, I don't even know the Japanese artists. I think it's called Blood Dragon or Blood something. I don't have it in front of me. But that was the other one they were talking about, and that's it.
Yeah, I listened to a lot of the Comic-Con coverage on Sirius. They devoted a special channel to it for 4 days, and when I listened to it, I was in the car a lot over that time, and so I got to listen to a pretty good amount of it, and maybe 10% of it dealt with comic books, and anytime they got into something real interesting, they would cut away to go to something else that wasn't particularly industry. And so they didn't really talk much about comics per se themselves. They interviewed like Stan Lee, obviously, and then did a couple other things like that. There was some talk of The Walking Dead and stuff like that, but they really didn't cover comics on the Comic-Con channel during the time that it was on. So, I mean, I'm not sure what they were going for, but the coverage on the radio station was pretty bad, so...
Yeah,
I think
go ahead.
It's a lot of wasted opportunities, and, you know, and I know I've never been to Comic-Con in San Diego, but, like, we've been hearing from folks for a long time that it's becoming an entertainment, or even maybe fan at its best, convention rather than a comic book convention. But there really are things that we could be doing to use the I think it's great that it's gotten bigger than comics, because it does mean we have more people we can lure in using it, but somebody needs to do that.
Yeah,
I mean, where I would leave it.
And I don't want to kind of harp on DC, because I do, like, you know, they're improving. But to me, after their announcement of DC, the 52, DC News, everyone's calling it, Comic-Con, to me, was the perfect opportunity to lay out, here's what we're doing different over the next year. Like, here is the big picture synergy. Like, we've got Batman Year One that's coming out in animated film. We've got Superman the Man of Steel that's coming out next year. We've got Dark Knight Rises that's coming out next year. And here is the big picture, how we're going to tie it all together and get people interested and excited and move people from the Dark Knight Rises over into Batman's book and Man of Steel over into Superman books. And here's the cartoon series that we're going to tie in. And to me, it was just that if you want to get going and really start, you know, running on all cylinders and getting people pumped, like, that was the opportunity to do it. It was such amazing coverage. Like, you had the Hollywood Reporter, you had Entertainment Weekly, you had G4, you've got all the mainstream press watching you. Like, that is the prime opportunity to get out there and get in front of them and say, this is the big picture and here's the big universe and how we're going to get everyone excited and tied in and pumped about comic books again. And it just wasn't, unless I wasn't at the right panel.
And
I will say, looking over the 52 new number ones coming out, there are a couple of looks like they're really you know, trying to balance it out by adding in some new stuff and some things that they haven't done before, giving some characters a shot that haven't really had starring things before. Like, I'm really excited to see a Mr. Terrific comic book. I've seen him a couple of times now, and I like the character a lot. And so I just hope that they're actually going to, you know, commit to the whole thing. And I saw, I guess it was Dan DiDio talking about it, and, you know, that he wanted to have a few series in there that may not sell as much, but they would give it a chance to grow and stuff, and balance that out with some of the big sellers to hopefully bring some of those along, kind of like the way the old movie studios did, where they'd have the big blockbusters and then they would allow that profit to fund some of the stuff that isn't as profitable. And I hope they stick with that, because it'd be nice to see some of this other stuff be given a chance to actually grow and find an audience.
Yeah, yeah, and a character like Mr. Terrific, who has a real high potential to become popular given the space, like, you would want the money from a really popular comic that will always sell a lot to help support something like that. You know, you have, it's a unique character who's, like, in some ways, and this is reductive, he's sort of like African-American Batman in a way, because he's somebody who's really this, like, business maven, and he's a brilliant guy, and he's a detective of sorts. But it sounds like they're framing this new comic more like a, almost like an Iron Man, more like a technology sort of a guy. But, you know, so I think that this character could be huge, and no one's really heard of him yet who doesn't read a lot of comics. So, yeah, that's what they should be doing, to try to flesh out some of those things. And I also, when I was reading through the list of what was going to be coming out in September, there was some that sort of seemed more genre-y, which might be worthwhile. There definitely are some comics I thought were interesting. I'm disappointed, but, you know, I just, partially because they had one freaking woman, and she's only solo writing one comic, and she's co-writing, because I guess it was too much responsibility, another comic with, like, some dude. But there were some comics that seem interesting that are going to be coming out. And I think that, you know, this is going to be one of those really divisive things that's already been divisive, I guess, between people who are looking into it and are excited and people who aren't. And I don't know. I think I'm cynical, but there's some stuff I'm going to be interested in reading anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I've been describing, when people ask me, I say I'm cautiously optimistic. In that, you know, I think there's going to be one or two breakouts of series that you didn't think were going to break out, and then a whole bunch are going to be gone by the fourth or fifth issue. They're already changing around some creative teams because people can't meet deadlines, which is good to see that they're actually sticking to that. And then, you know,
does that mean that they're hiring more people?
I haven't compared to the people that got moved in if they were already on something else. But there was definitely a couple series where they changed, I think, the artists because people weren't meeting deadlines, which they said that they were going to give people. They've got 3 months' worth of comics built up, supposedly, so that they do meet the deadlines and don't screw up. And then there's already some people that are falling behind, which is kind of, you know, interesting to see. But as a whole, the chatter in the background is that this was all a very rushed decision. So they were kind of scrambling a bit. And that even the 52...
Okay, what was a rushed decision?
The whole idea to reboot their entire universe. It came out of... From what I've been told, it came out of December's numbers, that their December was very, very bad, and that they sat around and said, all right, we need to do something drastic. And this is all rumor, but kind of makes sense, in that whatever, December and January, they're just like, all right, we need to reboot everything. So, you know, at that point, it's like, you know, where do you go? What series do you have? Of course, you have Batman, you have Superman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, but what else? And that originally it was going to be 48, and that it actually got expanded to 52, which is kind of funny, because 52 is natural, because there's 52 different worlds in the DC multiverse. So, to me, it actually is the natural thing they probably should have thought of to begin with, but...
Yeah, I assumed it was. That's funny.
Yeah, I heard that. I just started laughing. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think the numbers will probably increase, and they'll do really well for the first couple months, and probably give DC a really good second half of the year. But by January next year, I think a lot of will be shaken out at that point. So.
But who are these people who are going to be buying this stuff who wouldn't have been doing it already? That's what I want to figure out. It's possible that, like, I know, Ken, you're more of a Marvel person than a DC person. It's possible that you might buy a couple DC books that you wouldn't normally buy in the fall because you're curious about what's going on, right? But if
yeah.
the entire expanded marketing is just, like, people who read comics already but don't read DC much, that's not that much of an expansion. Certainly not for the industry, and I guess I care about the industry as a whole, not just one company or another. But
right, and
I don't
that's
know.
That's the interesting thing is you talk to people within the industry, and they say that there's 300, 400,000 regular customers. You go on Facebook, and I've did the couple articles I sent around our little listserv talking about it, and I easily find 2 million people who have admitted they're comic book fans without even trying. So you've got 1.7 million people, 1.5 million people out there on Facebook alone who say they enjoy comic books. So the question is, where are the companies and where is the marketing team and the online team going after those individuals? So that's ripe for the picking. I mean, if you could start engaging those folks, even if you get 10% of them who aren't part of the 400,000 are out there, you've already doubled the size of the universe you're talking about. It's
definitely.
Yeah, it's amazing that, you know, everyone says, oh, it's this universe. But here you have a data set. You have people who have admitted they're comic book fans. And it's
well,
just...
Are they fans of characters? They're not necessarily fans
no.
of comic media.
No.
Oh, see, no, really?
Yeah, so this is the methodology I use the Facebook reports that I do. It is people who said they're fans of comic books, graphic novels, manga, who are fans of individual companies. I do not do creators or characters. When it comes
wow.
to when it comes to characters and creators, it's even bigger. I mean, characters and movies alone is another 4
yeah,
million
that's
people.
Everybody.
Yeah, it's 4 million people out there just for DC characters. So that's not even including the Marvel well-known characters. That's just DC. There's like 4 million people on Facebook that said they're fans of DC characters. It's 2 million people who are fans of either companies or the idea of comic books as a whole. So to me, that's like the hardcore people. Those are the really, really interested. And the majority, I think it's like 75% of it's under age, I think, 30 or 32.
Oh, there's a future. Yay.
Yeah, exactly. And the more interesting is it's, I think the largest segment, depending on where you look, is usually it's under 17 or it's 18 to, I think, 21 or 25, something like that, is the largest two segments. So at that point, you got people who, you know, have their parents' income for the most part to blow. And the numbers stay pretty steady. So, I mean, it's a large, sizable people that are just missing. I mean, to me, I'd be dumping tons of money into advertising of those people. And just no one does it.
It would seem like that a lot of the same methods that political campaigns are using through Facebook and Google and stuff like that would be the ideal way to go, because it's inexpensive and it's effective, but it would seem like there's, you know,
micro-targeted,
Yeah. It seems like there's an audience for it, so.
But as a whole, there's not... What's kind of fascinating talking to people in the industry is that demographic info. Like, yeah, you've got Facebook, but other than that, you got nothing. Like, you can do Google ads based off of keywords. Maybe you pick up some people in their emails, maybe when they visit websites. But it's not the purchasing data like all three of us have used or know that exists for products. Like, doesn't exist when it comes to comic books.
So it would be very interesting to see the comic book industry realizing that it needs to hire political operatives to figure out how to do online marketing.
Yeah, well,
that's pretty bad.
Yeah, we'll turn it all into games. But yeah, I mean, that's the debate I had. Was I said selling a character, selling a comic book, is no different than selling an idea or selling a candidate. It's all the same. It's all the same difficulty. It's all the same techniques.
You have to have a good origin story, right, in any of these situations. There's all kinds of parallels there. It's true.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah.
I think you have pretty good chance. I mean, if you had someone like, you know, that has had some success in the political realm, like a Joe Trippier or someone like that, switch over and take over, you know, like marketing for a comic book company, they could make millions off of it.
Yes, it is possible. I'm saying no more.
So now that we've established that we actually have the proper answers for saving the comic book industry, we should talk about the other thing that we all know about, which you have to do to save the comic book industry, which is the whole women DC controversy of the past couple of weeks. Years, yeah. Actually, if you're female and have been paying attention, whatever.
Yeah, it's really been years. It hasn't been the last couple of weeks. The funny part of it is it seems to have thrown them off their game, where they should have been talking about the reboot. They're now instead talking about this and responding to chatter about this issue. And they finally did respond. It came like 3 weeks too late, but they finally responded to it. But for those who don't know...
Me, that's just been remarkable. I was like, oh, look, lobbying worked. You know, yeah. Maybe it's not working for us when we're trying to get anything fixed in government right now. But apparently it's working for us when we're lobbying corporate entities. I guess they're more concerned about what consumers want than elected officials are. So
for those who are listening that don't know the issue, so DC Comics with this reboot, and wow, is this episode turning into a beating on DC Comics Day.
It's because we love them.
We want to see them succeed.
Well, I do.
They're growing on me. Their issue is during the reboot, did not have enough female writers, female artists, and female characters. And the percentage of them participating in monthly comics actually dipped with their reboot. So the internet went up in arms. Dan Didio, who is, I guess, what is editor-in-chief of DC, famously stated, you know, I don't care about gender. I just want good artists and good writers, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but some of their choices for writers and artists, there's some female people who are looking for work that are definitely better than some of the folks chosen. So a
if you want to know why people aren't reading your books and you have nothing for half the population, it's sort of a striking thing. We're talking about it went down from 12% to 1% female.
Yep.
How can you do anything 1% female? That's remarkable. But what's great is that they're realizing now that, like, they can't just be dismissive of the fans who have raised concerns about this and that they should do something about it. I'm really impressed that they seem to be, you know, bringing on some more projects and hiring some more people. That's the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah, and I think as a whole it was just bad. They've never dealt with that, and they're still trying to learn modern-day PR. That kind of added to a lot of the issue. Because when I was up in New York Comic Con, it was interesting when I was hanging out with some of the DC staff after hours at a bar, the majority was female. And these were all editors and just various staff that, you know, hang out. And they're all comic book geeks. They love DC Comics. And I was just kind of, I was like, oh, wait, so here's all the, you know, female and staff in the industry.
You could just let them do something creative rather than just have people be doing marketing. Or, I mean, not that editing isn't creative, but I have a strong feeling that a lot of those folks would actually like to be writing, you know?
Yeah, and I think part of it is actually highlighting some of them. It's not just a writers and artists, but maybe bringing up the fact that, you know, a lot of the female editors, like, no one brought up that fact. Is like we have all this other staff that are women. I mean,
it's
Nancy.
It's not the same. Not the same doesn't count. It doesn't count. It's a completely different category of people. Writers and artists are completely different than editors. Editor in chief, maybe that's different. But
still,
I don't think
at
it's
some point. There's some decision making as far as direction of characters of editors. So there's some input. I'm not saying it's the same, but it's not quite as male dominated overall. Is it seems. I'm not saying it's good.
Yeah.
But, you know, they
no,
could
I
have done
think it's
a
really
lot
clear
better.
Though that they have in-house talent who could have done this, and they certainly have had other women who, you know. And I know that there have been a number of female writers who come forward and said, were an artist, that they were approached by ZC and they didn't want to do it at that particular time. But there really are a metric ton of really talented people, frankly. And maybe you haven't met one of them. Maybe you don't know them, but they're there. And I'm not saying this. I know I sound like one of those like people who's like bitter. I never submitted anything. I don't write and I don't draw. But that there are, I'm sure that there are women and there are people who are from outside of their universe who would be able to do creative new work that would bring in new audiences and keep things, you know, unique and who they could be working with.
Well, that was good.
I was going to say, I think their release on it was, from a PR standpoint, was a little tone deaf. You know, it comes off the you know, headlined "We Hear You," and there's kind of two really big problems with that as the lead into the response. The first, of course, is that people have been talking about this for a long, long time. So like, oh, we hear you. Like, we didn't know you were talking about this before, when you could go on the internet in about 5 seconds, find thousands of people talking about this same issue for years. And then the idea that, you know, if someone hadn't spoken up, if people hadn't spoken up, they wouldn't do it. So they're only doing it because they got bad PR. So it's I like that they're trying to fix it, but their response still is a little misguided at a minimum in its wording, if nothing else.
And I'd rather them acknowledge the fact that they're only doing this because they got bad PR, and now we understand how to influence them.
Well, it was interesting, and I kind of thought about it, is they're kind of in a bad position, is if they sat there and said, you know, listen, we offered it to this female writer or this female artist and they turned us down, but we have this team instead, kind of makes the team look like the B team and the second choice. So it's one of those, like, yeah, I'm sure they offered it to more people, more female writers and artists, and obviously some have stated that they turned them down. But you can't go out and say that because it looks like the people you did choose weren't your first choice.
But everybody knows that that's just not the way employment works. You're never going to have people go and match up perfectly, and you're always going to be somebody could or they couldn't. I don't know. I've heard that argument, Brett, but it just seems strange to me, since everybody knows that in the nature of employment, you sometimes don't always get the first person you wanted, and that's okay. It's like a mutual thing. It's not – doesn't mean you're like second best, you know. It's part, hiring people is a negotiation.
Yeah, I wonder how much that might have played in their decision of, like, how, you know, how much do we respond to it? Might have not at all, but, yeah, I mean, in general, they have an issue. And I guess we'll only see how well they do. But, I mean, to me, like, right off, you've got Becky Cloonan, who did demo for Vertigo for them. You've got Rebecca Isaacs, who did Deviate, and I thought is an awesome artist. Like, there's two female artist right there that would have been fantastic to have on a couple of series.
Rebecca was the one who said that she was doing something for Dark Horse and was not available or something. Maybe I'm confusing her with somebody else.
Yeah, I think she spoke up, but I... Yeah.
But there's more people. The point is there are more people. There are. And you know, and it's possible some of their editors who were women would have been good to have as writers. You know, they certainly know the characters have been keeping them straight for years. So.
Well, I mean, the perfect example, the perfect evidence that there are other female writers and artists, just go to any comic convention and walk down Artist Alley and walk down the small press, you will find gems of writers and artists of all genders and race and all that in that area that definitely deserve shots. So, yeah, there's absolutely folks up there.
One of the things that I was reading, and not to completely crib something off of an article I read elsewhere, but was that a lot of the issues is that, you know, you have a lot of the artists who are doing less traditional house-style comics, so then they're like, oh, well, you're not going to just blend in with everything else we already have. But then the point should be, well, good, because we need to have something other than what we already have, since what we already have is probably maxed out to the current audience, and maybe we need to have some different things going on. So maybe somebody's more cartoonish style or somebody's more, like, fine art sort of style, like, maybe that's going to work better.
Yeah, but...
And need to be more open to those things.
See, but my issue with that argument, I read the exact same article, and I wish I remember who said it, who read it, but... You've got, like, Cliff Chang, who's doing Wonder Woman with a very interesting style that I wouldn't say is traditional.
A good artist.
You've got J.H. Williams doing Batwoman, which is gorgeous to look at. Yeah, just absolutely gorgeous. Both of those are very non-traditional. You've got Kenneth Rocafort, who I love his work on Velocity, doing Red Hood and the Outlaws, and his is a very distinct style that's unlike anyone else's. Let's see, what else? I'm just flipping through their thing right now to pull out all the odd stuff.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, it isn't all uniform. It's true.
Yeah,
but I guess we should take the opportunity now maybe to migrate to talking about the worst artist and his current book.
Absolutely. Awesome segue. So we handed out, we passed around three comics. Ironically, they're all Image. It wasn't done on purpose. It just kind of was, it is what it is. The comics that we all read, we actually have someone responding on Twitter that's about the change of Harley Quinn's look. We actually have someone responding on Twitter about the show. Who wanted to bring up the fact about the change of Harley Quinn's look for the new...
Oh, yeah, her outfit. Wow, really awful. Really awful. Was that what they were mentioning?
Well, she's going to be in Suicide Squad, and she went from her awesome Jester's outfit to... I would kind of call it a bondage corset.
Yeah, it is, and it's like totally trashy in 90s. Like, they don't even know it's contemporary. It's amazing. They haven't, like, looked or, like, left. I don't know. Whoever does costumes just blows my mind every time because it's always so wrong. Either it's wrong in that sort of offensive, demeaning way, or it's, like, nobody wears things like that. And I mean, it's superhero costume, sure, but, like, they don't know what year it is.
Well, you might wear this if you're going you might wear this if you go to a BDSM club.
But it's even a 90s version of it. I'm telling you, it's a 90s version of it. It's not even a contemporary take on it, you know?
Yeah. But back to awful art. We all read three comics from Image Comics. It was Graveyards of Empires number one, and then two new comics, which Graveyards came out, I think, a few weeks ago, and then a comic that comes out this week, The Infinite, which is, I think, going to be first up on our discussion. And then Pigs number one. So I guess let's start with Infinite, and I'm fascinated and can't wait to hear what you say. That the series is actually have the write up. Let me read what Image has described the series. It's by Robert Kirkman and Rob Liefeld doing the art. And the Infinite number one's out this week. It's freedom fighter Bowen has lost everything in the war against the Infinite. His only hope is to travel back in time to prevent their world domination before it starts. Bowen can't do this alone, and he must turn to the only ally he knows he can trust, himself. Now a man in his 40s, damaged by the horrors of war, must team up with his younger, reckless, and optimistic 20-year-old self in order to save the world. Oh, please tell me what y'all are thinking on this one.
It's like if Terminator was terrible and illustrated by the worst artist of all time.
Let me give you – I actually went through because there's so many of the traditional Liefeld nonsense in here that I actually did a by the numbers chart here. So let me run down the numbers and then we can get into the details. All right. So number of characters or shots of characters with strange headgear, like, sort of like old school Shatter Star style stuff, or like just guys walking around with baseball caps in the future, that type of stuff. There were 13 of those shots. The number of pouches per character on the costumes on the cover is estimated at 14 per character. The number of shots throughout the rest of the comic with people just randomly having pouches on their costumes is 36. There are 24 shots of obscured feet where the character is being shown from at least the knee level up, and somehow or another there's like a word bubble or just randomly someone's foot disappears. Another Liefeld standard, there are 24 of those shots. There are 51 massive cable-styled guns that don't look like any kind of guns that exist in the real world, 51 of those. And 11 people in this issue get shot directly in the head and killed. So that's a starting point, I guess. The laziness, not just of, the actual art itself, but just the laziness of doing the same thing over and over again on every page, I guess, is part of it. And I will note that the villain, the main villain of the issue, the logo on his head is an upside down version of the Image logo. So that's kind of baffling, but
Wow, thank you so much for counting that. I was laughing my ass off. It's remarkable. And it just shows you how amazingly, profoundly untalented people are somehow able to continue to work. You know, the whole thing with the eye being upside down, that's interesting. One of the things that I picked up on is I felt like it was an anti-Obama comic. And not for the stuff that makes me cranky about him right now. I felt like it was them being critical of someone trying to use policy to change outcomes in the world. Like it was a critique of government as a force for changing and improving people's lives.
I definitely I would say I definitely got the same sense that it was like anti-government. I wouldn't say anti-government, but like that overreaching government to do good and more about the individual.
Yeah, I'll note there that the supposed evil villain bad guy doesn't actually do anything evil or villain-like, whereas the heroes are the ones that shoot 11 people in the head and kill them, so...
That's true. The book doesn't establish any reason, does not necessarily give you an argument that anybody's actually being oppressed by this leadership. Like, it doesn't convey that at
all.
There's no reason.
Yeah, he says it a couple of times, but there's no evidence of it. So,
I mean, maybe I was just reading into it because it's by Liefeld, but I was just like, this whole thing is people hyperventilating about how much they hate Obama and how much they hate feet.
and love shooting people in the head.
And
then,
there's a wonderful panel where the young version of himself is talking to this young woman, and she's saying, like, oh, you know, I don't do this that often, but I just felt like it's such a connection with you. And then he's like, well, I do this sometimes, but blah, blah. Like, what? You have to be like, yeah, I have sex a lot. What? It was really kind of pathetic. I don't know. It's like what you might have written if you were 14.
And I also note, you know, there's another kind of common Liefeld mistake that comes up in here is he doesn't remember what he drew on earlier pages, which you would think he would be able to do because he already drew them. But there's, you know, for no particular reason, the two main characters are shown on the cover and in the beginning of the story with the cross swords on the back, you know, Shatterstar style. And then they never use the swords. They never withdraw them even once. And then after the one guy is killed, the other guy's swords kind of disappear off and on. They come back and then they disappear. And so in some shots he has swords, some shots he doesn't. And then whatever the supposed logo or image, whatever, on the bad guy's head changes throughout the issue. Some shots it's not there at all. Sometimes it's an exact version of, like, the upside-down image logo. And then by the end, it's got this completely different design with extra lines added in and stuff like that. So it just randomly changes for no reason throughout the issue. So,
how many issues of this do you think are going to happen before it gets canceled? Or does it go on to become subsidized by wingnut welfare of the comics industry? I don't know.
It is. It's actually only a 6-issue limited series, so we only have 6 issues to make fun of.
No. But couldn't it possibly end before then?
Probably not. I mean, it's Robert Kirkman and Rob Liefeld. I mean, I just don't see it. But we haven't the favorite. I just noticed that the circle disappears and comes back. Good call, man, Ken. Now I'm going through the issue, looking at all this.
Okay, you guys are all gonna get some like Image No Prizes, I guess, for recognizing those things. Very observant.
And I will say that, like, and I was talking to Brett about this earlier, is that we're both like huge fans of Kirkman usually, but it's baffling that Kirkman wrote this. I don't see his influence anywhere in the story, and it's hard to imagine.
No, I know what you mean. It felt like pure Rob Liefeldness. No, I totally know what you mean. It was like maybe Kirkman like ran away screaming because Liefeld was so crazy. He's like, I can't deal with this. This is all you, man.
It reminds me of Bad Image from when they started, when it was all art and the stories were fairly incoherent.
Maybe Liefeld just drew everything first and then Kirkman came in and just like wrote in, you know, the text after that because it doesn't seem like there's anything coherent going on here. So,
yeah, I'm trying to find the lines. There was a couple that were like screamed 80s macho movie.
So much of the dialogue is just cliched and like same stuff you've heard out of every like future sci-fi epic and comic that's ever been written. Particularly the first half of it is just like line after line of like the most, you know, overused lines and everything that you've heard many, many times before, and it was really grating on me. So,
if I get shot, you got to go keep on doing it without me. Oh wait, no, you got shot. Ah, yeah, it was. It's like if Terminator was really awful. That's what it would be.
But I mean, here's the perfect example: is the Imperius. If I die here today, I'm taking every last one of you with me.
That's
and then
what
proceeds
I say every
to shoot two
to
people
work.
In the head. it's kind of amazing. So on to good books, at least what I thought were good books.
yes, we can move on. From the worst comic of all time. It might not be the worst. It's pretty bad. It's the worst comic I've read in a very, very long time. I'll say that. But
yeah, so we got June 15th was the launch of Graveyard of Empires number 1. To read that off is Afghanistan, Marines face a never-ending onslaught of Taliban, but even hell can get worse. The dead are coming back to life in the Graveyard of Empires, and only together can both sides of today's conflict survive tomorrow's undead assault. Yet another zombie comic. This is written by Mark Sable, who did Unthinkable and Two-Face Year One, and the also Paul Azazeta, I'm pretty sure I just butchered that name, who did Amazing Spider-Man. So that came out June 15th. And I really liked it.
Yeah, I liked it. This was on my read list even before you said that we should check it out. I have one problem with it, and then I'll get to this part that I like about it. And that's that the concept of zombies being in wartime has been done twice in the last year by other comics. And so it's a little, the premise is a little old. Like, I mean, there was a, Zombies of Mass Destruction, which sent, you know, zombies into the Middle East as, you know, our frontline troops that came, I guess it was a short series, but it was stretched out over like 2008 to 2010 or something like that. The last issue just came out not too long ago. And then, the Night of the Living Dead comics that are going on now have a lot of interaction with soldiers and the undead as well. So it's not really copying those series at all. It's just covering kind of the same general territory, although it's doing it better than either of those. So it's the topic a little less interesting than the story itself. And I think I like a lot of this issue. In particular, I want to point to, there's a passage about, you know, middle of the issue where it shows kind of like this big, you know, 20-panel double-page spread where it's showing all these little slice-of-life images of what the troops are going through there, from, you know, like the big muscle guy working out and then wrestling with his friends, to another guy who's, you know, shooting up on heroin. And there's all these just little shots. There's no dialogue. It's just tracing these characters throughout the day. And I think it really captures very well kind of what life would be like, you know, in this type of zone. And it's really good stuff, I think.
I actually didn't get to finish it. So, unfortunately, I was only able to download it right before our show. But from what I saw, it was really intelligent. The art was really well done, and I'm usually really critical of both of those things. I didn't get to the zombie part yet. That was
it's like right at the end.
I didn't know there were zombies. I thought it was a war comic.
Shit, we ruined it. So the two things to me is, like, one, the comic's like riddled with small details that really add to it. And then the other thing that was funny is there's the whole thing about them putting bombs in people for surgery. And then that hit the news that Al-Qaeda was actually looking to do that, like, the week after the comic came out. Which is bizarre timing, but I also laughed.
Because the Joker did it.
Yeah, and then I'm like, I guess Al-Qaeda's watching The Dark Knight and reading Graveyard of Empires to get their ideas.
Maybe we can all get along in the end now, anyway. There's hope if we enjoy the same cultural products.
Another thing I really like about it is that it's complex and it's not simplistic in terms of, like, who's good and who's evil. You know, the zombies, and particularly in this issue, I'm sure there'll be a bit more later on, but they're really only, like, three or four panels that have any zombies in them, and they're all at the end. So it's really, there are good guys and bad guys on both sides, and it's hard for you to figure out who you like and who you don't like and who you should root for and not root for and who's good and who's bad. And I think it's very well written and very realistic in that these aren't caricatures. These are people. And I like that. You don't see that a whole lot in war comics or war-related comics. It's usually you know, here's the good guys, here's the bad guys, and, you know, have at it. So.
So the final book that we kind of checked out for this episode doesn't come out till September 14th. So this is a really early review, and about it. It's Pigs, which is by Nate Crosby and Ben McCool, who did Choker and Memoir, which I think both are really good series. So the series, and artist Brenna Timura. It's a brand new ongoing series to join Image's elite ranks, which we can argue about. The story centers around a second-generation KGB Cuban sleeper cell activated and assigned to overthrow the U.S. government through a series of kidnappings, assassination, and acts of terrorism. But why has the call come now, 50 years after the original cell last heard from Mother Russia? I give it, like, massive thumbs up. I read it this afternoon, and that last panel made my jaw drop.
Oh, my God,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I don't usually read this kind of... I have to say, just everybody, like, disclaimer, I tend to read superheroes and only superheroes. And I thought it was really good. It was really good. And I look forward to hearing more about the political motivations of why these things are happening. But I thought the characterization of all the characters in it was really well done. I liked the way the woman, the older woman who they were interrogating, but played back at the cops, and the art was good, and the end panel was pretty shocking.
Yeah, I definitely agree. The older woman, her character was great throughout. She was very kind of snarky, and she was the smartest person in any conversation she was in. Was kind of running intellectual circles around the characters that were supposedly interrogating her. I thought that was great. I thought, you know, it was a little slow leading up until that last page, and that last page is really what sold it for me, because it was just like, wow, that's there's so much in there, you know, so many questions. And I think the only thing that I normally read that's anything like this is the stuff with Nick Fury, which has a lot of similar themes and stuff, but then it has superheroes in it. So, but I think this has me really intrigued. I'm really looking forward to, you know, what comes after this. So,
yeah, I mean, to me, like, the big one for me is the way it's the story's told. I mean, it's a very familiar interrogation that you'd see on, like, SVU, which makes it really accessible for people. The interplay between the characters, I think, were fantastic. And just, that last panel just is what put it totally over for me. That's where the jaw dropped. I'm just like, holy crap.
Somebody knew it was going to be serious, and that the actual comic was going to make guesses and take leaps that require creativity to answer, right?
Exactly.
Because
where it was just like,
they've written themselves into a situation that they actually have to really think through and how they would go through it next.
Yeah, I mean, it's about a sleeper cell, and they're going to do this terrorist act or whatever, and you're like, all right, you know, great, there's whatever's going to happen. Maybe they blow some stuff up, whatever. But just that last panel, and the thing is the way it's, I think, paced is, yeah, it's somewhat slow, but there's also that buildup of, like, we need the answer, and we know this is going on. What's your plan? What's going on? What's next? And you kind of, there's like a tension that just kind of builds throughout each page. And then it gets to that end where it's just, to me, it was jaw dropping. Like, it was exactly what I look for a comic, but I love those type of comics. So.
Well, and that slow pace makes that last page so much more effective. It's sort of like, you know, Sixth Sense, which if you don't have that ending on the Sixth Sense, it's kind of a dull movie, but because that has that ending, it makes everything that came before it kind of more vivid and important, because it all leads up to that one moment. And this issue kind of has that kind of a feel to it, that, you know, it's relatively slow pacing, but that last thing pays off all of that slow pacing. So that's good stuff.
Did any of you guys ever read Human Target comic?
I never have. I
read the one issue that they gave away, like, for free a couple years ago. I thought it was fantastic, and I meant to get more, and I didn't. It kind of reminds me of that a little bit, but that might be because that's the only thing I have to compare it to from comic book world at all. I don't know how that series went, but it had a sort of a similar feel to me in a way. I recommend it. I definitely can't wait to see the next.
Yeah,
it's definitely very similar in kind of some of the stuff that's in Secret Warriors, this Nick Fury series that's going right now. So,
and it's actually done. This week was the last issue with issue 28.
Which is terrible.
Yeah, it's so disappointing, because it's such a great series.
Yeah.
we're actually coming down.
I hadn't picked it up, and you guys sold me on it. I guess I'll have to get the trip paper back now that I'll be able to do that.
It's the last 30 seconds, so I guess we got to wrap up, unless we want to extend it. Hey, we can keep on going.
You extended it, doesn't broadcast live. People only hear it on the playback, but that's fine.
Yeah. All right. That's completely up to you.
I wanted to go back for a second just real quick on Graveyard of Empires. I wanted to point out that I really, really liked the cover, particularly not just in, you know, the art of it, but in terms of marketing, that you go into a comic shop and you look across and there's all these like action-packed sequences and every cover is just like crammed with detail and everything like that. And this had a simple white cover with a, you know, a skull with a flower in it, and it would really jump out on a shelf at me if I saw that there compared to all the, you know, very busy stuff around it. So I think it's very good marketing cover, in addition to looking good too. It's good art, and it's good.
Yeah,
I'll buy that.
Yeah. I'll
hold off on my review on League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Century 1969 for next week.
Yeah, I was about to say, are we going to be doing this next week? We want to do this 2 weeks from now.
I'd say next week.
Decide that online. All right, I'm up for it.
Oh, shoot. You know what? I'm going to, yeah, we should totally be doing it. So.
All right, I gotta check my flight, but I'm actually going to be at Gen Con all week. If not, y'all could do it without me too. So.
Oh, actually, I'm going to be coming back from a camping trip, but.
Okay. So no next week. We'll do it in 2 weeks then.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, you guys. Bye.
All right, great. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Yeah. Give us your feedback, and it's a work in progress, et cetera. Hope to hear your call.
Cool. And I guess you'll hear from us in 2 weeks.
Great.
Awesome.
Bye.
Have a great week.
Bye.